Hi, and welcome to Author Uncut. I'm your host and author, Patrice Williams Marks. Today's podcast highlights some of the funniest and most well-written moments from the classic comedy, My Cousin Vinny. But first, if you enjoy my podcast, I'd be grateful if you spread the word by leaving a rating and a review. Author Uncut can be found wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
What's the matter with you? You're acting like you're nervous or something.
Well, yeah, I am.
What are you nervous about? I'm the one that's under the gun here.
Trial starts tomorrow.
You want to know what I'm nervous about? I'll tell you what I'm nervous about. I am in the dark here with all this legal crap. I have no idea what's going on. All I know is you're screwing up, and I can't help.
You lent me a little camera, didn't you?
Oh, Vinny, I'm watching you go down in flames, and you're bringing me with you, and I can't do anything about it.
And?
Well, I hate to bring it up because I know you got enough pressure on you already. But we agreed to get married as soon as you won your first case. Meanwhile, 10 years later, my niece, the daughter of my sister, is getting married. My biological clock is ticking like this. And the way this case is going, I ain't never getting married.
Lisa, I don't need this. I swear to God, I do not need this right now, okay? I got a judge that's just aching to throw me in jail. An idiot who wants to fight me for $200. Slaughtered pigs. Giant loud whistles. I ain't slept in 5 days. I got no money. A dress code problem. And a little murder case which, in the balance, holds the lives of 2 innocent kids. Not to mention your biological clock. My career. Your life. Our marriage. And let me see. What else can we pile on? Is there any more shit we could pile on to the top of the outcome of this case? Is it possible?
Maybe it was a bad time to bring it up.
When I first saw My Cousin Vinny for the very first time, I wasn't a screenwriter. I wasn't even an author. I was just a person, a moviegoer who wanted a good laugh. I got that and much more after watching My Cousin Vinny. That film, along with Star Wars and Clueless, are films I watch at least once a year, every year. Yes, I'll admit it, I'm not ashamed of it. After doing some screenwriting of my own, I came to appreciate the script and the film even more. The way Joe Pesci's character stakes are gradually raised, Marissa Tomei's character, which is integral to the plot and not just window dressing. The huge laughs, the true moments, all make for a near perfect script and film, in my opinion. Did you know the film is taught in some law schools? Real attorneys say it's very realistic in how the justice system and courtroom dynamics work. In fact, it was voted by the Bar Association as one of the greatest law films of all times. Screenwriter Dale Lawner, who also wrote Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and the recent J-Lo movie Hustlers, didn't pull the story out of thin air. It wasn't a happy coincidence. Lawner did his research. And as the queen of research myself, I was curious about the type of research he did before one frame of film was shot. According to an interview with Screencraft magazine, I'll put the link in the show notes, Lawner had a friend who was an attorney. He asked him tons of questions about the legal process. And what would happen if this happened? What would you do if this happened? What are all the options? His friend would say, yeah, but it's a movie. You don't have to show this or that. But Lawner wanted to know anyways and wanted to include this and that to make it as accurate as possible, even if it's just a comedy. That's why it's lauded as not only being hysterical, but a very realistic film. And did you know that the process I just described is what could be considered sensitivity reading today? Yes, that's true. Sensitivity reading is simply someone with experience sharing their knowledge to make characters and situations more realistic and accurate. That is exactly what Lawner did by picking the brain of his attorney friend.
Is it possible the two Utes...
To what? What was that word?
What word?
To what?
What?
Did you say Utes?
Yeah, two Utes.
What is a Ute?
Oh, excuse me, Your Honor. Two youths. Is it possible the two defendants entered the store?
This exchange of the two Utes is not only pee your pants funny, but actually comes from a real conversation. As a writer, your mind never shuts off and you use real life experiences within your manuscripts or scripts. In this case, it was a conversation that Pesci was actually having when they were prepping the film inside a hotel room. Pesci was asking a question about the two Utes in the script when they realized this exchange should be in the film.
Is it possible the two defendants entered the store, picked 22 specific items off of the shelves, had the clerk take money, make change, then leave? Then two different men drive up in a similar... Don't shake your head. I'm not done yet. Wait till you hear the whole thing so you can understand this now. Two different men drive up in a similar looking car, go in, shoot the clerk, rob him, and then leave?
No. They didn't have enough time.
Well, how much time was they in the store?
5 minutes.
5 minutes? Are you sure? Did you look at your watch?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. You testified earlier that the boys went into the store and you had just begun to make breakfast. You were just ready to eat and you heard a gunshot. That's right. I'm sorry. So obviously it takes you 5 minutes to make breakfast.
That's right.
Right, so you knew that. Do you remember what you had?
Eggs and grits.
Eggs and grits. I like grits too. How do you cook your grits? You like them regular, creamy, or al dente?
Just regular, I guess.
Regular. Instant grits?
No self-respecting southerner uses instant grits. I take pride in my grits.
So, Mr. Tipton, how could it take you 5 minutes to cook your grits when it takes the entire grit-eating world 20 minutes?
I don't know. I'm a fast cook, I guess.
I'm sorry, I was all the way over here. I couldn't hear you. Did you say you're a fast cook? That's it? Are we to believe that boiling water soaks into a grit faster in your kitchen than on any place on the face of the earth?
I don't know.
Well, perhaps the laws of physics cease to exist on your stove. Were these magic grits? I mean, did you buy them from the same guy who sold Jack his beanstalk beans?
Objection, Your Honor.
Objection sustained.
Are you sure about that 5 minutes?
Ignore the question.
Are you sure about that 5 minutes?
I don't know. I think you made your point.
Are you sure about that 5 minutes?
I may have been mistaken.
I got no more use for this guy.
This is a part of the film I look forward to every time I watch the film. Yes, I'm a part of the grit-eating community, although I'm not from the South. Was the screenwriter Lawner from the South? No. Then how did he know about grits? Well, I know about grits because I'm black. Lawner isn't, but he did the next best thing. He took a road trip down south for research. Lawner describes the road trip on his website. I'll leave the link below. He says that the idea came to him after he read about some guy who took the California bar exam 13 times before passing. That was the crux of the Vinny character. Lawner then went on an actual road trip, starting in New Orleans and crossing Mississippi and Alabama. He actually experienced getting his car tires stuck in the mud. Ding, part of the story. He also noticed that all these small hometown restaurants served grits. Ding! Grits will be in the script. He knocked on the door of a DA, don't ask me how he found him, and took some notes from their conversation. He also came across a screech owl. Ding! The owl makes it in the script. Now, if he didn't take this road trip, the script would have been totally different. Without his research, he may have only applied stereotypes of southern towns and people. My Cousin Vinny could have been just another lazy film. But it wasn't.
What am I gonna wear?
What are you gonna hunt?
I don't know. He's got a lot of stuffed heads in his office.
Heads? What kind of heads?
I don't know. He's got a boar, a bear, a couple of deer.
Whoa, you're gonna shoot a deer?
I don't know. I suppose. I mean, I'm a man's man. I could go deer hunting.
A sweet, innocent, harmless, leaf-eating, doe-eyed little deer.
Hey, Lisa, I'm not gonna go out there just to wimp out, you know? I mean, the guy will lose respect for me. Would you rather have that? What about these pants I got on? You think they're okay? Oh!
Imagine you're a deer. You're prancing along, you get thirsty, you spot a little brook, you put your little deer lips down to the cool, clear water. Bam! A fucking bullet rips off part of your head. Your brains are laying on the ground in little bloody pieces. Now I ask you, would you give a fuck what kind of pants a son of a bitch who shot you was wearing?
Where did the story about hunting and the poor little doe come from? I actually did my own research and couldn't find where Lawner discussed this exchange anywhere. Could have missed it, but I couldn't find it. But how could it not have come from research and or his road trip? Folks in that part of the country not only hunt for sport, but for food. My guess is that he came across a ton of people hunting across the South and decided to play it for laughs. Mind you, Lawner didn't go for the cheap laughs. He did not make fun of hunting or the people that hunt, but rather the city folks, i.e. Vinny's fish out of water, experience with it.
Got 30 fucking minutes to take a shower, get a new suit, get dressed, and get to the fucking courthouse.
You fucking shower, I'll get your fucking suit.
Hey, little Yankee wuss. Look here. Yeah. I got you $200. You gonna kick the shit out of me now?
I love the scene where Vinny is at the point where these two local jerks are the last straw that breaks the camel's back. Vinny has had enough. He hurls himself at the guy as he punches him. Once the guy's on the ground, Vinny snatches the money and leaves. We as the audience are with him all the way. That scene was classic because we as the audience are fed up with these guys too. In an article on writersonbox.com, I'll leave the link in the show notes, Lawner says he has a very simple dramatic rule that he follows. The audience needs to get involved in the character, and I may personally add, the situation. Lawner goes on to say that the character must have mounting crisis. But with a mounting crisis comes a payoff.
Ms. Vito, please answer the question. Does the defense's case hold water?
No. The defense is wrong.
What is she doing?
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
How could you be so sure?
Because there is no way that these tire marks were made by a 64 Buick Skylark. These marks were made by a 1963 Pontiac Tempest.
Objection, Your Honor. Can we clarify to the court whether the witness is stating opinion or fact?
This is your opinion?
It's a fact.
I find it hard to believe
that this kind of information could be ascertained simply by looking at a picture.
Would you like me to explain?
I would love to hear this.
So would I.
The car that made these two equal length tire marks had pods of traction. Can't make those marks without pods of traction, which was not available on the 64 Buick Skylark.
And why not? What is pods of traction?
It's a limited slip differential which distributes power equally to both the right and left tires. The 64 Skylark had a regular differential, which anyone who's been stuck in the mud in Alabama knows. You step on the gas, one tire spins, the other tire does nothing.
That's right.
Is that it?
No, there's more. You see, when the left tire mark goes up on the curb and the right tire mark stays flat and even, well, the 64 Skylark had a solid rear axle. So when the left tire would go up on the curb, the right tire would tilt out and ride along its edge. But that didn't happen here. The tire mark stayed flat and even. This car had an independent rear suspension. Now, in the 60s, there were only two other cars made in America that had positive traction and independent rear suspension and enough power to make these marks. One was the Corvette, which could never be confused with the Buick Skylark. The other had the same body length, height, width, weight, wheelbase, and wheel track as the 64 Skylark, and that was the 1963 Pontiac Tempest.
And because both cars were made by GM, were both cars available in metallic mint green paint?
They were.
Thank you, Ms. Vito. No more questions. Thank you very, very much. You've been a lovely, lovely witness.
And wow, what a payoff. Love how Lawner went against stereotypes and had Mona Lisa Vito, a.k.a. Marissa Tomei, know her stuff when it comes to cars, transmissions, trannies, etc. She also came through for Vinny in a big way with a phone call to the judge. I don't know which character I love more, Vinny or Mona Lisa Vito. And that may be the biggest compliment of all to a screenwriter. So, did I miss any of your favorite scenes from My Cousin Vinny? Let me know by visiting my anchor.fm page, the link is in the show notes, and clicking the button that says message to leave me a voicemail. I may just use your voicemail in a future podcast. Join me next time when I share with you my experience of being interviewed by multiple French media outlets on sensitivity reading. Want to suggest a show episode or get in touch? Visit me at authoruncut.com or send me an email at mailbag@patricewilliamsmarks.com. And finally, to join our email list, go to authoruncut.com. Until next time, write on.